Right, we're back home. How does it feel?
Good.
Where were we?
Cornwall.
What were we doing there?
We were going to see our grandma and grandpa. We went to the beach. We went to the cinema. I can't remember. Well, I can't remember, but nothing else really that exciting.
We were walking in the sand. Well, we were only there for 4 days. We walked along the
Technically
sand.
Technically three.
Three, yeah. So we walked along the sand dunes. We went we went rock pooling.
Yeah, at the beach.
You guys caught a big fish.
Yeah.
I was well impressed. What else do you like about rock pooling?
It's really fun since I really love climbing. I just love climbing.
Yeah. I do get a little bit nervous when I see you climbing. I'm just like, don't fall. But yeah, it was nice. It's nice seeing grandma, grandpa, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know, I didn't have that when I was growing up as a kid in Scotland. Both my grandfathers died when I was very, very young. So I can't remember them. One of my grandmothers was in New York and I hardly ever saw her. And my other grandmother also died very young. I think I was about 4 when she died. So
wait, I'm sorry, so you were 4 or she was 4?
When I was 4.
Oh.
She wouldn't be my grandmother, she died when she was 4. But anyway, so basically when I used to come back from holiday, you know, Christmas holiday, Easter holiday, summer holidays, all my friends would be like, oh, we went to grandma, grandpa's, oh, we had presents from grandma, grandpa's. And I missed out. I didn't really know what that meant. So I'm really happy that you guys get to see grandma, grandpa often and you get to have presents.
Yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
And we also had to go for a little scavenger hunt in a wardrobe to find my birthday present. And so then we could take it home and then I could open my birthday present on my birthday.
Yeah, because we won't be in Cornwall during your birthday.
Yes, it's my birthday's first day back from the summer holidays, I think. Just 1 month to my birthday.
What do you think of that time when we went to the park and there were like crisscross lines all across the sky?
Absolutely awful.
Why'd you say it was awful?
Because the crisscross lines in the sky, they're not real clouds. They're fake.
How can you tell that?
Because real clouds, you never see them in like totally straight lines. They're always just ever so slightly wavy.
Do you know, when I was your age a long time ago, I never ever remember seeing the sky like that. Now it's like these grids, like knots and crosses. Like it's just kind of like insane.
The aeroplanes are playing knots and crosses.
Right? In the sky. Yeah. Oh, man. It's unbelievable. I don't know. A lot of people say it's not real, that they're just normal plane, you know, water coming out the back of the plane and leaving condensation trails.
And well, if it was condensation, then it would be gone in like just a couple of hours or something. But that stays the sky.
Right. And it just spreads out, gets thin, and then suddenly everything's cloudy and you can't see the sun anymore. Like,
yeah.
How bad has it been this year? Like, it's just been raining and grey all the time.
So I think that the grey clouds, or the clouds that have been blocking up the sun recently,
yeah,
aren't actual real clouds. They're the planes. Since even if they were the real clouds, it still wouldn't be that dark.
Well, you know, some people think, if you think like this, you're a crazy person. They go, oh, you're crazy. There's nothing wrong. These are normal. Like, you know, just imagining things. You're just, you know, imagining things.
Imagining. Look up at the sky. Just look up.
Oh my goodness, baby, I love you. This is what I say. Just look up. Look with your own eyes. It doesn't look normal, does it?
Not at all.
Anyway, we're back home now. We're back home. We've got chickens all around us. What's the best thing about having chickens?
They're really cute. And they're basically alive lawnmowers.
They are? They are.
So we just killed our grass until we had to fence it all off. Then the grass could heal.
Yeah, it's recovered, hasn't it?
Well, it's not completely covered. There's some bits here and there.
No, I meant recovered. Like a lot of the grass has come back now.
Most of it has, just some of it here and there needs to still keep on growing up.
Do you know what I think? When I look at things like grass and trees and I just think how resilient nature is, how powerful it is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we try and kill it and attack it and chop it down, but it just grows back. It just keeps growing. And it, this
tree,
right?
Chop off my head.
Yeah, but it, the speed at which they go is just different. Like, we were running around, they're just very slow and just keep growing and multiplying. And it's kind of amazing. Do you think so?
Yeah.
Like, we think we're the masters of nature. We're not really. Nature is quite incredible. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, how does a little seed become a tree with roots going into the ground, pulling out the nutrients from the soil, growing up bark, leaves?
But underneath the soil, if you look at the top of the tree, underneath the soil, the roots are the exact same, just without the leaves.
Yeah, it's like a mirror, isn't it? It's like, yeah. It's just as big, the network underneath, as what you see above.
Yeah. But with like the thick roots coming out straight from the bottom, but like the thick ones on top of the tree, and then it goes out into little thinner lines, like on the top of the tree, just without the leaves.
It's amazing.
And then on the top of the tree, the those branches collect sunlight and water. Well, not really water, but sunlight. And on the bottom, it collects nutrients and water.
Yeah, it does. And then
really,
and
it, quite incredible.
It is incredible. And it's all, and it all comes down to the sun. Sun is the life giver, the energy. The energy that comes from the sun is converted via this process called photosynthesis. Do you know about that? Where it changes the light. The light is used to create the, mm-hmm. you know, the energy for the plant, photosynthesis. Mm. And it uses something called chlorophyll, which is what gives all the leaves and grass the green color. Pretty incredible.
I've learned about that in science.
Oh.
It really is really, really interesting. But who knew that just a massive, giant ball of fire and gas could literally be a life giver?
Right.
Just a massive ball of fire in the sky with lots of little versions in the sky.
Little stars, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Mm.
Pretty amazing.
Really is amazing.
Right. Well, I hope we can go back to Cornwall in the next couple of months, because I like having a little break.
Yeah.
It's nice.
But I'm so excited for August.
Yeah, something exciting is happening in August. What's happening in August?
Well, we'll be able to go to Cornwall again. And this time it must be a hot summer, otherwise I am killing the sun.
Yeah, we need a nice summer. I'm missing
it. We need it.
Right?
We need it.
Do you like the sun? Do you like being outside? Yeah, me too. All right. Well, listen, let's let our guests listen to the podcast. We'll let them carry on listening. Well, they haven't started. The podcast hasn't started yet. Everyone listening, please make sure subscribe to my show and support it. And check out my affiliate codes with Hunter Gather. How nice is the mayonnaise?
Nice. Very nice.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And and we use ghee as well. And they've got MCT oil and some liver supplements and some marine collagen. Apparently that's good for your hair and nails. Not that I need that. But yeah, check out Hunter Gather, the website. I've got an affiliate code. Check out Root Wellness as well. They've also got great products that I use. So it's only stuff that I would use and recommend that I've put up there on the show notes. And like I said, please support the show. Final words to you. Do you want to say anything?
I guess I don't have anything else to say.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Right, Jonathan Tilt. We've had some tech issues this morning. This is now, I don't know, third time lucky, fourth time lucky. Thanks for joining me. I know you're a very busy man and you need to shoot off in 55 minutes. I'm going to share the screen again like last time, and because the listeners won't have seen it. But listen, this is your website, jonathan-tilt.co.uk. Standing for independent candidate for West Yorkshire Mayor 2024. And I love it, mate. If you wrote this, I love you, man. I would vote for you. I know I can't, but I would. And I would encourage everyone to vote for you. You talk about if you were elected, you promote and protect the interests of people and families and communities and businesses in West Yorkshire. You will resist the takeover of our democracy, society, and public services by unelected and unaccountable corporate globalist interests, and you'll protect and promote our freedom of movement, speech, thought, and association, and medical freedom. Dude, I love you, man. Well done. Right, tell me, how much power do you actually have as a mayor if you get elected? And what will you be able to do?
Significant powers, actually, particularly in the area of policing. The mayor in West Yorkshire, as with the other metro mayors, doubles up as the police and crime commissioner. So myself and the person who will be deputy mayor, which is Suzanne Harborne, will write a police and crime plan. And that police and crime plan will say that West Yorkshire Police will not be enforcing any future lockdowns that are declared by central government. They won't
Amazing.
Be enforcing mask mandates. And we will have the authority to do that. If you vote for us, you will give us that authority to go and direct West Yorkshire. We can't stop lockdowns being declared by central government, but we can stop them being enforced locally by the West Yorkshire Police. And there's police and crime commissioner elections across the country, and there are one or two other police and crime commissioner candidates who are taking this line as well. That is what we will do. That's probably the fundamental power the West Yorkshire mayor has, is to act as the police commissioner for West Yorkshire.
And
have significant other powers.
Yeah, what are those other powers?
Mostly around transport. They're in charge of integrated transport within West Yorkshire. And we're currently, you know, Tracy Braeburn, the current Labour mayor, has a transport plan that says walking, cycling and public transport will be the first choice for every journey in the future in West Yorkshire. I think she actually probably means the only choice for every journey in West Yorkshire. I'm a cyclist and a walker. Don't get me wrong. I cycle to work quite frequently, 8 miles away, but nobody's telling me I've got to cycle. It's going to be my personal choice to cycle. 86% of car journeys are made, 86% of journeys are made by car at the moment. And I will protect your right to continue to travel by car. I will resist, you know, the carbon allowances and carbon budgets, personal carbon budgets that are definitely coming in with the future Labour government. And I'll resist all the sort of range of, you know, ULEZ type measures that are going to be implemented to prevent you driving first into city centres, then probably town centres, and then ultimately everywhere. Transport and policing are, you know, they're very significant parts of the WEF agenda, aren't they? That's two areas that they want control over. They want control over enforcement of how you behave, and they want control of how you move about. And the mayor has authority over both of those areas in West Yorkshire, as do the other most of the other metro mayors.
So I've got a lot of listeners from around the world. West Yorkshire is quite a large population. It's about almost 2.5 million. You're talking about city of Leeds,
yes,
and Bradford.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big chunky area of the country. And unlike some of the other mayors we were talking about, you know, previously, like that are ceremonial, it sounds like you do have a lot of power. And I don't know if you have seen, you probably know, in Oxford and London, they've been bringing in literally, you know, ULEZ, congestion charging, 15-minute cities, barricades. They're like, you know, herding people in traffic in a certain way that's really counterproductive for businesses and people. So I guess if you can stop that, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that's what we need. But this isn't your first rodeo when it comes to politics, mate. You're involved in the Freedom Alliance, and I don't want to touch on that for too long, but I don't believe in the political system. You know, what are your actual chances of getting in? Do you honestly think the uniparty system will let you get in?
I think we've got a bigger chance with this than we have with any of the parliamentary elections that we've been involved in. I mean, I'm not a long-term politician. I only became involved in politics in 2020 to try and use the elections as a means for resistance against the agenda. I want to get elected and I want to do the things that we've talked about, but it isn't always about getting elected. A big vote for, I mean, I've been described as Yorkshire's notorious anti-vaxxer and things like that. So if 20% of the population go out and vote for me, even if I don't get elected, that will scare them. That will send a message.
Right.
So it isn't always about actually getting your seat in parliament or whatever. Sometimes it's about using the election as a platform to make a statement. And that is powerful. It does get noticed. They don't like us standing as independents. I mean, I did the the BBC debate the other day. And, you know, there were six of us. A couple of the candidates are friendly and personable. But the other three, the Labour, the Tory and the Green, they were just looking at me as if it, you know, something they scraped off the bottom of the shoe, basically. They hate us being there. And they hate us getting involved in their little silly game. And that's, you know, that shows that it's a powerful thing to do, is they weren't bothered. And when we used to operate through a small political party, Freedom Alliance, they weren't really bothered about us. They didn't really see us as a threat. But now we're standing as an independent. And there's hundreds of, you know, hundreds of freedom-loving independent candidates standing in council elections as well. So go out and vote for all of them as well. We've got five here in Kirklees, where I live.
What's the turnout? So,
yeah, they don't like it. The turnout typically in local elections is about 30-35%.
So that's
the problem. People are.
Sorry, yeah, I was going to say. Imagine 70% of those people who are not voting because they don't want to vote for anyone, or a big chunk of that, even say like half of it, 35%, are not voting because they don't like any of the options. If they just came out and voted for you, you'd win.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's there for the taking. This is the frustration. You don't even need half of them to vote. I mean, you know, if it's a 30% turnout, Labour are getting 15 and the Tories are getting 15, then you only need 15% of the rest of them to turn up and vote for you and you're going to get elected. And as I say, you don't always have to get elected. Getting 10% will scare them. It will terrify them. So do it, please. Yeah.
Exactly.
You're not
do it.
To the system. It's not, you know,
it's the voter apathy. I think voter apathy is actually playing into their hands. You know, you're almost led to think and believe, do you know what? There's no point. There's no point. They're all the same. What's the point of voting? And, you know, I've been guilty of that. But I've actually come to realize, actually, like you just said, no, vote for the independent candidate, just like we need independent journalists, independent doctors, lawyers, anyone who's independent, anyone who's not bought or captured. And, you know, let's move on to that. I think people need to be aware about the fact that you're not captured. You know, the way my cap is uncaptured. I love the fact that you said on your website, I can't be bought. I won't take donations more than £500. So that's amazing. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, my stance is that I'm not going to be bought by a corporate interest. So I have to demonstrate that. I'm also only going to take, you know, to me, politicians are overpaid. The West Yorkshire mayor has an obscene salary of 110,000 or something.
Wow.
So I've said I will take, I know. So I'll take half of that and the other half I'll give to local sports clubs, basically. You know, it's not going to make a massive difference to sports across West Yorkshire, but as a gesture, I think it's important. I'm going to behave. I'm going to walk the talk. I'm going to do what I say. And that's one small thing that I can do to demonstrate that I'm not going to be bought. I don't want the full salary. Even half the salary is, you know, probably overpaid if I'm absolutely brutally honest for what they do. But
dude, can I just say something? Yeah, Hold on one second. That's not a small gesture. That's massive. You're saying you would take a 50% cut in your salary. Like, hold on. That would send shivers down the spine of any politician anywhere in the world if you said, yeah, cut your salary by half. I mean, good for you. That's epic.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it still would leave me better paid than the vast majority of people in West Yorkshire. It's obscene what they're paid. I mean, how do you justify it? Yeah. Just to go back to the, you know, I mean, voting isn't endorsing the system. It is, we're just, you know, using the system against the people that own the system. So please go out, you know, wherever you are, I know West Yorkshire not, vote independent. If there isn't an independent candidate, then still vote and go and spoil your ballot paper because they don't like that. If they see thousands of people writing, I do not consent, and I'm not fully up to speed on the legalities of how exactly that operates as a contractual statement. I mean, Graham Moore's your man to quiz on that. But yeah, if you can't, I've been at these counts where they count the votes during the middle of the night quite often, and they're incredibly boring. And the most interesting bit, which all the candidates get very excited about, is reviewing the spoiled ballot papers, where they go and look at the people that haven't voted for a candidate. They've written some obscenity or, you know, parts of the human anatomy or whatever. across the ballot paper. And they read them. They read every one. So write, yeah, I mean, apparently I do not consent is the statement to write, but if you're not writing that, write what you want, you know, COVID is bollocks or whatever you want to write, write it on the ballot paper because it will get read by your local politicians. But don't do that if there's an independent or there's some freedom-loving candidate because that's quite soul-destroying if you're standing and somebody's written that across your name. So check out the candidates first. But if you haven't got anybody you can vote for, go and spoil your ballot paper because those get counted as votes.
Yeah, listen.
Imagine if there were more spoiled ballot papers than the best in the world.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I've looked into it in the past, and this is votingcounts.org.uk. What is spoiling your ballot and how do you do it? Spoiling your ballot is one way to show your dissatisfaction. And like you said, it's very powerful because if you say, look, 50% of people spoilt their ballot, that's a massive statement. And below are some of the rejected ballots from the Electoral Commission. And I think a big cross is one way of doing it, by the way. That is one way of doing it. But you can
only if you get the candidates first.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm just saying for other elections, but I think if you have an independent candidate, but not just independent, because look, at the end of the day, we need to question everybody. If you're an independent and you're saying, I want WEF and I want the UN agenda and we're killing the planet. And we need to eat bugs. No thanks. But if we've got someone like you, hell yeah, we need to vote for you. We need to support candidates like you. And you know, like you said, I don't know about you. I think 20% is a good figure. You know, you mentioned earlier of 20% people anti-vaxxer. You know, look, I'm an awake normie. I was never an anti-vaxxer, but COVID made me an anti-vaxxer. I blame COVID for that. But, you know, you know, you're not just about anti-vaxxer. I mean, yes, you're talking about medical freedom, but what does medical freedom mean? I guess that means informed consent to you, no mandates, you know. But look, you've talked about transport. You've also talked about farming food and the rural economy. Talk about that a little bit. What's your views on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we've seen the war on farmers, particularly in Ireland and Holland, and that clearly is part of the agenda to drive down food production, to make us all dependent on you know, processed meats, that processed foods that come from the big globalist corporations. West Yorkshire's often thought, I mean, you in your introduction, you talked about the big cities, Leeds and Bradford and Huddersfield, and that's often people's view of West Yorkshire. But it has large rural areas as well. I mean, where I live is very rural and has a big rural economy, a lot of small farms. And I think that they will be under threat if we go down the Irish route of, you know, trying to get rid of a third of livestock or whatever it is they're doing, then you know, West Yorkshire will be, you know, very much in the firing line for that. And I want to make that statement that I will protect and defend farmers' rights to earn a living along with all other small business people. I mean, I run a small business and, you know, it's obvious who suffered most, and obviously the medical profession suffered badly, but, you know, there was a war on small businesses in the first lockdown, definitely. You know, the corporations could stay open, but everybody else had to shut because they don't want financial independence. They don't want people who, you know, who aren't dependent on the state for their money. And farmers, you know, fit into that category, don't they? So they, I think
100%.
They want,
100%.
I'm just making the statement that I will defend their right to earn a living in the traditional way that they've earned a living.
Mate, you're 100%.
There's lots of them in West Yorkshire.
So I was that independent guy. I was an independent surgeon. I'd left the NHS in disgust. And I thought I was going to be free being a private surgeon. But do you know what? Being a surgeon, you need a hospital. You need an operating theatre. And during the lockdowns, I was locked out of the hospitals. So I was unable to earn any money. So while all my colleagues who were in the NHS and doing a bit on the side in the private sector, they were laughing. They were in the gardens having barbecues, getting paid full pay. And they didn't see a problem because it was like no work, full pay. And I was like, yeah, this isn't great because I wasn't eligible for furlough. I don't work for anyone else. I work for myself. And as an independent, I got royally screwed over. And then even when the lockdowns lifted, the private hospital said, no, we're now doing NHS contract work. So you're still not allowed in. So for months and months, I was just unemployed. And, you know, my bank balance is just draining. I had to remortgage the house to get additional funds. It was a really painful period. And I've spoken to a lot of independent business people since, and they say the same thing. They were like, it's great for the Amazons and the big corporations, McDonald's could stay open, but, you know, independent businesses had to shut down. And it's funny, there's two types of people, those who got paid and sat at home and thought it was wonderful, and those who were running independent businesses had, you got destroyed. And I think it comes back to, they don't want independent, free, financially free people, because if you are shackled to your payslip, you're controlled. You can't speak and say what you want. You can't think what you want. I spoke to a recent farmer, one of my local farmers, and he was saying that young farmers, and, you know, not even young farmers, just farmers in general, are really struggling to get bank loans and, you know, support for from the banks, you know, and for investment or buying farms. Have you heard anything about that in West Yorkshire?
Yes, not specifically from the farming sector, but I mean, there was a lengthy period from about when it kicked off in the start of 2020 up until about the end of 2022, when it was virtually impossible to open a business account. So if you wanted to set up a new business, you couldn't get a bank account to do so. We came across this when we set up Freedom Alliance, which was, you know, obviously had to have banking facilities, and we couldn't get it. And the banks told us it's not because you're a political party. We're not opening banks for any small businesses. So, you know, if you haven't got banking facilities, you can't as a business function. It's, you know, it's your absolute lifeblood. There was a definite agenda to make it very, very hard for people to set up private businesses. And you're right. I mean, I love the phrase shackled to your payslip. And, you know, sadly, that is what has happened. I mean, you know, I was painfully aware that, you know, at the start in 2020, when we were sort of, you know, freedom movement was mobilizing, and particularly, you know, what we did through Freedom Alliance. Most of the people that were heavily involved in it were either self-employed or retired. They were people that essentially weren't shackled to a payslip and, you know, were allowed to say. And, you know, I've had hundreds of emails over the, you know, the time I've been doing politics over the last 4 years with, you know, people emailing in saying, love what you're doing. I'd love to be a candidate for you, but I can't because I'll lose my job.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same.
That's the system, isn't it? That's how it works. Yeah.
It's the same with the doctors. If you look at who was speaking at, you had Ross Jones, who's a retired consultant paediatrician. You had Anthony Hinton, who's retired. Well, no, retired from the NHS and doing a little bit of private practice. But, you know, he's paid off his mortgage. Kids are grown up, left school, you know, all that kind of stuff. So nothing. We didn't really have anything to lose. Any doctor who did speak at, who did have something to lose, got totally destroyed. Refer to the GMC investigations and suspended and whatnot. And you know, I've spoken to so many doctors as well who say, oh, I love what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. I can't do what you're doing, though. I'm not in a position to lose it all. And I don't think it's just medics. I think it's medics, it's lawyers, it's everybody, isn't it? Police, everybody. And that's a problem when you are controlled by large organizations or the state. And I don't know, what do you think? I think there's a real blurring of the lines between state and large corporations now. They've almost melded into one. Would you agree?
Yes, I do. Yes, I absolutely agree. And that is actually the dictionary definition of fascism, is when the state and the large corporations merge. Who are the fascists in the room here? It's the people that are supporting the agenda, not those that are opposing it.
You talk about agenda. Have you come across Agenda 17 or whatever it's called?
Don't think I have, actually, no, which...
All right, let me just show you this. UN Agenda number 17. Right, let me just pick it up for you. So this is kind of concerning, right? Let me share my screen and you'll see it. And it talks about everything that you've just talked about. So this is the UN Global Agenda 17. And, you know, it's always couched in a way that sounds great.
Very warm words, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, so look, number one, no poverty, two, zero hunger, three, good health, well-being, quality education, affordable and clean energy, decent work. But, you know, it goes on and on and on. Okay. Sustainable cities and communities. And the thing is, this is actually quite sinister. This global agenda 17 is an inversion of everything. So when they say no poverty, that's a complete lie. What they want us all to be poor. They want us to be serfs. Zero hunger means food crisis. You're not eating steak and meat. You're hungry. Good health and well-being means you're sick. You're vaccinated and medicated to the hilt. Quality education means you're indoctrinated. gender equality. I mean, that's just that whole transgender. Clean water and sanitation means fluoride is in everything, heavy metals, toxins, blah, blah, blah. All the sewage is recycled. You don't get fresh water. Affordable and clean energy means, you know, your gas prices and electricity prices go up through the roof. We've got shortages, energy, you know, smart meters and smart appliances. You know, it just goes on and on. I mean, what I'm trying to say is it's an inversion. Everything is, I mean, have you not found that? That, you know, they say things that sound so good, like climate change is to save the planet, but we're going to do it by creating solar panels and electric cars that actually rape the oil, earth and create massive mines and pollute the water and the sea and the air. But you know what? We're saving the planet. Everything's upside down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's how they operate. They capture good intentions, don't they? Yeah, I mean, I probably count myself as an environmentalist. I think our stewardship of the planet is pretty rubbish. But it's not about carbon. Carbon, it's just utter, you know, unscientific distraction. But, you know, that enables your opponents to then badge you as an uncaring person who doesn't look after the environment, the same way we were badged as uncaring during the, you know, the pandemic. We were the caring people. We were trying to protect people and ensure that there was informed consent going on, but we were the uncaring ones that were killing granny. And, yeah, everything gets turned around. I mean, we were just chatting before the start. Quite interested in weather and weather forecasting. And we've got quite a lot of the news out at the minute, running with headlines that there's going to be a heat wave this weekend, which there isn't. If you look at the bias Met Office, there's no suggestion that there's going to be a heat. It's going to carry on cold, at least until this time next week. But yeah, you get these headlines. Yeah, we're going to scorch, we're going to fry. It's going to be 21 degrees Celsius and stuff like this. And it's not even true. The forecasts aren't even saying that. It is an absolute inversion of reality. But because people see it, they think, and then it gets entered into the sort of, you know, the memory, doesn't it? Oh, there was that heat wave in the middle of April. Well, there wasn't.
Yeah, 100%. Do you know, Jonathan, honestly, I'm really gutted that the government's lied to me. They promised that we were going to have global warming. I've been looking forward to this. And you know what? They haven't delivered.
Global boiling. Let's keep up with the terminology.
Right. Where's the global boiling? There were, you know, you can't see it, but I've got a little heater next to me. I want global warming. Where is it? Give it to me.
Yes. Well, I mean, seriously, in this country, 20 times more people die from cold than die from heat. So, I mean, there isn't going to be global heating, boiling, warming. It's unscientific and it's a fraud. But if there was, it would save lives because cold kills in this country, not heat. Yeah.
If anyone hasn't yet listened to or watched it, I did a podcast with Tom Nelson, the great Tom Nelson, who helped produce the movie, The Climate, the movie.
If you
watch my podcast, you've actually got the movie at the back end of it, the whole movie's done. On the podcast. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant watch and it just makes so much sense. But again, it's another example of inversion, you know, just inversion. And I've got to the point where, you know, whatever I hear from the government or the mainstream media, or to be honest, even the mainstream alternative media, I kind of just like ignore it and go the opposite direction. But anyway, let's talk about canvassing and your work on the ground. Now, I've done a bit of, I don't know if you know this, I used to be a member of the Brexit Party when I thought, in those days, that it was actually what it was saying it was going to do. I didn't realize it was a controlled opposition vehicle. A lot of people find that very difficult to stomach. But I am now of the opinion that it was used to take the force and willpower and passion of people who wanted Brexit and to diffuse it and take it down into the long grass, you know, just down a dead end alley, and just hijack that whole movement that we had. But anyway, it was very difficult. I had to create a team around me and we put up stalls. You have to print leaflets. It's expensive. It's manpower. Have you got that? Have you got the logistics? I mean, 2.5 million people over a large geographical area. How are you going about this? And what's it like on the street when you talk to people? Are you getting a good reception? Do people know about you? What's happening?
Yeah, perhaps if we go back to Brexit and the Reform Party after this, but I'll try and answer that. One of the advantages and probably one of the reasons why I'm standing as mayor is the combined authority distributes a booklet to every elector in West Yorkshire, which has a statement in it by every candidate, and you all get the same amount of space. So I have a statement that has gone to every house in West Yorkshire, and more than every house, twice to most houses, saying why I'm standing, climate change is a fraud, the government aren't on your side. It's a very hard-hitting, bold statement, which has created some kickback, but has created people just turning up at my door and wanting to meet me just like they did as we were trying to log on at the start. I had, you know, people I don't know who were on our side who just come to meet me because they agreed with my statement. So so that is probably a key part of the campaign. But we are doing an awful lot of leafleting and meeting. I mean, I'm off to Morley after we've had this meeting. I'm operating mostly through the Stand in the Park groups. We have, I think the Freedom Movement actually is well networked and well organised. And, you know, I was at Leeds Stand in the Park last night and there were 30 odd people there who were helping me leaflet. And I can't, you know, I can't
Amazing.
Keep up with their demand for leaflets. Actually. And actually, the big parties don't have that. The last local elections, I had the Conservative MP on my estate walking around leafleting by himself.
Yeah.
Because they've got no helpers. Yeah. So, you know, in some ways, we've actually got more energised and willing manpower than the mainstream parties have through groups like Stand in the Park. And, you know, there's these networks all over the place. I mean, through the profile I've had through Standing, I mean, I've been reasonably prominent in the Freedom Movement, particularly locally in Yorkshire, and I thought I sort of knew everybody that was, and I don't. I've had contact from all these little sort of freedom independent groups all over West Yorkshire that are meeting in pubs, meeting in people's houses, 10 people here, 12 people there, you know, wanting to get involved. And I didn't even know these groups existed, and they're on my doorstep, some of them.
Amazing.
So, you know, those networks, are they sort of forced us into building up those networks, and those networks are still there, and they're incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. I mean, they did a great job of thinking that, you know, anyone who didn't believe in the government was a bit of a loony and a fringe. But actually, we're quite a lot of us out there. You know, I wrote a Substack recently saying my target audience is that 20%, I believe, of the population who's been resistant to all of the BS. You know, I'm not trying to be a mainstream person and appeal to the normies. No, like, actually, I'm appealing to my target audience. People like me, actually, who were left thinking, you know, I've gone crazy. Am I crazy? Or has the world gone crazy? Either option is not good. You know, I don't know which one I prefer, actually. In some respects, it'd be better if the world was just normal and I was the only one that gone crazy. But no, the world has gone crazy. And it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and you just don't know who anyone is anymore. But no, I think these groups, Stand in the Park in particular, I found very helpful. And they're really good people. Good people switched on. And I really hope it makes a difference for you. And what you said about the Conservative Party, mate, it was 100% the same over here. You know, there was no support. I had so many people who were willing to support me, and I got stood down by Nigel. But like the Conservative Party, I mean, the candidate didn't even come out in the street. They were nowhere to be seen. And I just wonder how much we can even trust our elections. I mean, I can't name the name because it was off the record, but someone, you know, very in the know, in the political scene, a politician said to me that the Brexit vote, the actual referendum result was something like 70%, 72% in favor of Brexit. And they fudged it and made it look like it was 51%. And it was like a close call, you know? And I was like, seriously? And they were adamant. Yes. Yes. There was such a powerful movement who wanted to be free of the EU. And it was almost also a protest vote against the mainstream political parties. What I would say to you is, do you actually trust the voting system? I mean, are they going to be fair? Are they going to, you know, play fair with you? Have you had any attempts of being smeared or discredited? Or have they been so far, you know, held back from that?
Right. I mean, on the sort of, you know, the practicalities of voting and whether it's rigged. I mean, a lot of people get confused with the American system where there's voting machines. There aren't voting machines. It is all counting pieces of paper in this country, thankfully. My personal take is it's a bit like the magician's trick because, the county's open. They invite you to come. I can take 30 people along to the count. So it's a bit like the magician saying, look at this. Watch me here. Make sure I'm not cheating. Look at what I'm doing. Have a very close look. Go behind the screens and have a look. And the cheating isn't taking place there. The cheating is taking place in the media manipulation, the opinion polls, the cutting you out, the giving you no coverage. That's where they cheat. I don't actually think that they do. I mean, I think there have been instances of cheating. The Thanet election in 2015 when they had three fire alarms during the middle of the count and things like that. So I think there have been instances. But I don't think there's systematic cheating at the poll. Because I think it is like that magician's trick. They say, come and watch me. And they do, they encourage you to watch you and come in and have a look and, you know, count the power yourself if you want and that sort of stuff. They want scrutiny there, but they want scrutiny there because that's not where the problem is. The problem is everywhere else.
Yep. I think. Yep. And what about when you're on the street now? Do people recognize you or know who you are? I mean, are they disgruntled with the mainstream parties or are they? Because part of the problem I always say is, not really they, but us. And what I mean by that is we still vote for blue team or red team. We think that there's a choice and we don't actually take personal responsibility for our health and we don't scrutinize the candidates and what they actually stand for. We go, oh, we hate the Labour Party, but they still vote for the Labour Party. You know, and or we hate the Tories, but they still vote the Tories because that's what they've always done. You know, I'm just... You know, what's your experience been like? Have you even been on the streets? Have you held stalls in the markets and gone out and talked to anybody?
And that's what I'm doing. It's banging it down with rain. That's what I'm doing in an hour's time in Morley. We've got a detailed campaign schedule. We've got a big, you know, campaign presentation in Armley next Thursday that everybody's welcome to come to. We're doing an awful lot of leafleting and you know, I'm meeting people all the time, both in person and, you know, and the hundreds of emails I'm getting each day, which we are trying to keep up with and trying to respond to. So if you have emailed me, just bear with us. We are trying to get them all done, but it is we are swamped with the contact we're getting. I mean, when it comes to local elections, most people don't vote red or blue. I think that's what will happen at the general election. I think we will be herded, people, not us, but people will be herded into the red and blue camps. And we are probably going to have to, you know, go through the horrendous experience of having Keir Starmer as Prime Minister for a few years before the real revulsion kicks in and people do start to ditch the party system. But at local elections, most people, and mayoral elections, most people protest by not voting, as we've discussed. And, you know, that's where the battleground is, to get those people that think that they're making a statement by not voting to actually make a statement by voting for an independent candidate. Who will prevent any future lockdowns in West Yorkshire. I mean, that in to the freedom movement, that's what I would say this mayoral election is. It's a referendum on whether you want lockdowns in West Yorkshire or not, because myself and Suzanne will prevent that. We give us the power and we'll be in a position to prevent any future lockdowns in West Yorkshire. So just treat it as a referendum on that. Lockdowns, you like them or don't like them. If you like them, don't vote for me.
And what's the opinion on the street when you talk to people?
Well, it depends what topic you're talking on. I mean, it's varied. I mean, there isn't a universal. You get your diehard people that support, particularly the Green Party, quite often. And I mean, this election is quite interesting in that, you know, typically West Yorkshire's Labour split fairly evenly between Labour and Tory, and nobody else makes much traction. Now, the Labour support is collapsing because of their support for arms sales to Israel and their refusal to support a ceasefire in Gaza. So the Labour support is in absolute freefall. I've no doubt about that. The big question mark is he going to stay at home or is he going to vote for somebody else like me who's made a clear statement as to where I stand on the genocide that's taking place in Palestine? The Conservative vote is also in freefall because they are demonstrating on a daily basis that they're particularly rubbish at running the country and generally not to be trusted. So you've got Labour and Conservative who might get sort of, you know, between them might get 40% of the vote each sort of thing. And that's in freefall. But where's that vote going to go? Is it going to go to me and the other small party candidates? Or is it just going to stay at home? That's the thing.
So who are the other small party candidates?
There's a Green, a Liberal, and the Yorkshire Party leader, Bob Buxton, is also standing. So the six of us, and that's why we targeted this election, because we knew that we would probably be the only anti-establishment candidates. I mean, they're all, yeah, it's not for me to speak for them, but I think it's fairly safe to say that those three are all signed up to the Green agenda. They were all very pro the vaccine program and pro lockdowns. And so you've essentially got five candidates who are to varying degrees pushing and supporting the agenda, and you've got me that isn't. I'm the only one that's different, and that's why we went after this election, because we were strongly believed that we would be the only anti-narrative candidate, because, you know, we've done by-elections and things where there's 16 candidates and 10 of them are essentially saying the same thing. You Freedom Alliance and UKIP, and you might say Reform in there or not. I mean, that's a different debate, but we thought that wouldn't happen here. We thought I'd be the only anti-establishment, anti-narrative candidate, which I am. And that's why we're throwing everything at this rather than some by-election.
100%. I mean, the thing is exactly what you just said. All those other people, I'm in Liberal Green Party. There's not really any difference. I mean, what I don't get is how the population and doesn't see it, the majority of the public. I mean, lockdown, COVID was a perfect example between, you know, Labour, Liberal Democrats and Conservative. Like, where was the opposition? I mean, there was none. The only difference between the parties, apart from the colour branding scheme and logos, was one just wanted a little bit more of what the other was proposing. I mean, the idea that there was an opposition was actually laughable. And then subsequently, you just need to keep looking at whatever they're doing. And you think, apart from having a stupid, rowdy school kid kind of like argy-bargy in the Houses of Parliament over nothing, fundamentally, there are no real differences between these parties. They all want to execute the WEF and UN agendas and the WHO, you know, treaties and whatnot. There is no difference. And it's the same with the geopolitical scene, the wars, to support the wars. There's no anti-war. There's no peace-loving group. There's nothing. So, I mean, you sum it up in your Twitter profile really well, Jonathan, by the way. Candidate for West York's mayor, campaigning to protect our freedoms, to resist tyranny and shrink the state. What is the budget of your, you know, what will your budget be if you become the mayor?
If you leave the police out of it, because it is really sort of two jobs. It's the police commissioner job and the mayor job wrapped into one. The mayor's budget outside of policing is just short of £1 billion.
A billion?
All of which goes on transport. Yes.
Wow.
And that's likely to be more. Yeah. And that predominantly goes on transport.
And where does and you know when you're the mayor, like, will you be up against the like local council? I mean, how much of it is executive power where you go, you know, I've been given a mandate, I'm going to put across these policies and have them, or are you going to be at the mercy of a council filled with Labour and Conservative? And then, you know, the way Trump was hounded and shackled and chained, will you be like the same? Will you be like gagged from doing what you really want to do, or will you have real power?
The answer to that is both, actually. In terms of the police commissioner role, it's real power. You are in charge of the police. That is real power that can't be diluted. In terms of the other areas, transport and housing, you have to operate through something called the Combined Authority, which essentially representatives from the five local authorities in West Yorkshire who come from the party system at the moment. I mean, hopefully if we can get some independence, start doing what's happened in Oldham and start getting independent control of the councils, then that might change. But at the minute, the combined authority will be me and representatives of the Labour and Tory party, who probably won't be terribly keen on me, as I will have just beaten their candidates if I'm sitting in that seat. How that's going to pan out and play out, I don't know. But I mean, we're not going to roll over. And, you know, if we are frustrated in what I'm trying to do, then we will make sure that that's platformed and publicised and that it's been blocked by the council leaders. But yes, outside of policing at the minute, you have to act in partnership with the council leadership from the five councils. And that may prove challenging, I suspect.
Have you ever come across the Independent Alliance?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm familiar with David Fleming. I mean, it's probably best if we don't talk about in detail about other independent groups. Would be my starting point on that.
Oh, the reason why I'm saying was I was speaking to him and he was talking about how we promote independence, and I thought because you're an independent and that's the whole point, like getting more independent candidates out there. I think this is what the problem we have, that we don't really have choice. It's just, you know, one party or another party. And, you know, I don't know what the obstacles are. I don't know why people don't stand for independence. Maybe there's the same, the voter apathy. Is it the money? Is it the time? You know, what is the process been like for you?
I mean, one thing I've tried to do, and part of the reason why I'm standing actually is to, and I was doing this at the lead stand in the park last night, is to try and encourage other people, particularly council elections, to start standing as independents. There's no deposits at council elections. It doesn't actually cost anything to stand. The forms will take about 10 minutes to fill in. It really is. I mean, it's harder work getting a library card than getting your name on the ballot paper at local council elections. And obviously, if you want to leave Lower Emmet and anything, that's going to cost you some money. But we, you know, there's quite a lot of expertise in things like vote freedom now, where we've run hundreds of candidates for council elections. We know what we're doing. We can hold your hand through the process and show you how to do it.
What's that called? Vote freedom.
Project. It's a collection of people that, you know, with a lot of election experience who've stood for parliamentary elections, council elections. It's vote-freedom.org. And we really act as a support group for people that want to stand, from the freedom movement, who want to stand as independent candidates. Some people we support heavily and give them a lot. Others, it's just a, you know, 20-minute phone call and then they go off and do it by themselves. You're not our candidates. We don't own you. We don't badge you. We don't call you Vote Freedom candidates, but we're there in the background.
Are you talking about this?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Rescuing democracy, restoring freedom, rejecting corruption.
And so they're supporting. They're supporting hundreds of candidates and to stand for local election. And what I'm trying to do is platform the fact that it isn't that difficult to stand for local election. You can get the forms in, and we get. We are getting increasing numbers of votes. I mean, I'm not standing this time in Kirklees, but I've stood before, and I'm up to about 300 votes now. So. If we just keep doing that, and places like Oldham, they are removing Labour from power through the independents, the Oldham independents. So it can be done. You can get these parties out of the council chambers at a local level, which is the starting point to getting them out at a parliamentary level.
This seems very similar to what David Fleming is trying to do. Maybe that's why you don't want to talk about him.
I'll talk about David Fleming if you want, but I mean, we'd been at this for sort of 3 years or so with Vote Freedom, and he refused to have any involvement with us. Believes somehow, even though he's never stood for election, that he's got more election experience than the collection of people that are running Vote Freedom.
Do you know what the problem is with people? They're people. I find that, you know, people are sticky, man. People have egos. People are stubborn. I don't know what it is, but it's funny. And the problem is we're so fractured, man. We're like we've got so many different groups, like Reform and Reclaim and Heritage Party and the Medical, the Freedom Alliance. I mean, what we really need to do is put just independence forward to counter these other big parties. But it's difficult. It's difficult. So, I mean, talking about local councils, you know, if you become a local councillor, do you actually have much power? I mean, how much time does it take?
Well, politics is always about two things. One, what power you've got, and two, the platform. And often, you know, the platform is more powerful than the actual power. I mean, I do press releases to local press all the time in Kirklees, where they ignore them outside of the election period, when they basically have to, you know, give you some sort of coverage. If you get elected as a councillor, you can get yourself in the press, on the local media, on the local radio stations. So you have got that platform. You will be allowed to go on and make an anti-narrative statement. So the platform, if you're one independent, if there's council with 60 uni-party councillors and you're the one independent, then no, practically you haven't got any power, but you have got a platform. But somebody's got to be the first councillor. You know, that's what happened in Oldham. They started with one or two, and then they get five or six, and then they get 10 or 11. So, you know, just the fact that you're, for the first year, going to be there by yourself shouldn't be too disheartening, because next year there might be two or three other people come and join you, and that's how you do it. Somebody's got to be the first one in the chamber, haven't they?
100%. Absolutely. I mean, if everybody keeps saying, oh, well, I'm not going to do it, I'll let someone else do it, no one else is going to do it. You know, and that's why, you know, I hate to move away from politics for a second, but, you know, I keep saying to my doctor colleagues out there, come on, man, just some of you speak up. You know, I looked up how many doctors are registered in the UK. Do you know roughly? Would you be able to guess how many are registered doctors?
No, I don't actually. No, it'd be interesting to know.
Something like 380,000.
Christ, that's a lot. I would have been guessing quite a bit lower than that. Yeah.
Right, you would have thought. And out of that 380,000, how many doctors do you know publicly have gone up and spoken against the narrative and the COVID whole thing? How many do you know?
Well, if you exclude the retired ones, then you could probably count them on one hand, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I won't go through the process of counting them on the one hand. Could,
<couldn't> you? No, don't do that. But what I'm trying to say is that's really weird. Because it's not even 1%. I mean, I don't know what it is, but it's like 0.001%. It's like, so less than five people, easily less than five people out of 380,000 have spoken out. I mean, just probability, from a probability point of view, you would have people of differing opinions anyway, and there would have been a sizable chunk that just doesn't agree with what the government's saying. But the ones that are actually vocal are less than 5. Wow.
Well, it's that phrase you used earlier, which I am going to nick off you, I'm afraid, which is shackled to the payslip. That's how they operate. They capture people really into three groups. There's those that are direct employees of the state, which obviously will include most doctors and most healthcare workers. There's those that are on benefits. And there's those that work for the large corporations, which, as you say, have like, effectively merged with the state. So when you get those three groups of people out together, you are really looking at the bulk of the working population.
I'm going to add something for you. I love that list, but there's a fourth one. And the fourth one, I mean, you can disagree with me, but the fourth one is where you require a registration or license to practice. And if you stray out of your scope of practice or you do something that deserves a slap in the wrist, you will get suspended and investigated. And it's used as a tool to punish you or censor you or, you know, to basically cancel you. Would you agree?
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, as you know, I'm an acupuncturist. Acupuncture isn't actually a statutory regulated profession. There's been a big campaign to make it one. And I'm very glad it isn't, because during COVID, I resigned from the British Acupuncture Council, which is a professional body, because they were pushing for acupuncturists to be pushed towards the front of the queue for the vaccines. Tore up my membership card and gave it back to them. And I was able to do that because it isn't statutorily regulated. But if it had been, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
No, you wouldn't. Absolutely. And I wasn't aware that things like Council of Chiropractic and Osteopathy are the same. They're all captured. These central organizations, these regulatory bodies, are actually extensions of the government, state, you know. And, you know, it sounds good. Let's have a registration, a central national registration, make sure that these people are qualified and experienced, and you get what they say on the tin, you know, you get what it's labeled, and you don't get some quack or some charlatan or some imposter. Yeah, that's great. But the truth is, what it does do is it doesn't actually make sure you've got good quality and you don't have people who are going to scam you or be, you know, unqualified. All it does is censor and control those that are registered. I think that comes back to where you and I are very libertarian at the end of the day. Have a tiny state and just leave me alone. I mean, I don't even believe in democracy now. I've come so far. I think this whole idea that we need to protect our democracy, it's a manipulation to make us think that democracy is a good thing. Well, actually, democracy just means mob rule. It means the majority can tell me what to do. And I don't like that, because you've just seen that the majority were happy to get vaccinated. The majority were happy to say, yeah, mandates are okay. Well, that's wrong. I don't believe in those things. So just because the majority believes in it doesn't mean I want it. Sorry, carry on.
I've had a long-running, direct democracy, voting in referendums, fundamentally probably is quite a good idea. The Swiss system is quite nice and works quite well. But if we'd had direct democracy in 2021, we would have had mandatory vaccinations, because the majority of the population would have voted for mandatory vaccinations. So it's not the panacea people think it is. And until you get rid of the corrupted and captured and controlled media, democracy in whatever form is going to be very, very flawed. But I mean, one of the positives of the last 4 years is that, you know, the traction that you and people like you are getting in the alternative media. People are deserting the BBC and ITV and Sky and the rest of it and listening to podcasts. Most of the people I know get the news from channels like you and UK Column and people like that. They don't listen to the news. And so that's one of the sort of, you know, one of those underwater currents that's really powerful and I think is disabling their ability to enforce tyranny on us. But direct 100% round about March 2021 would have had mandatory vaccinations. I have absolutely no doubt about that. But the institution that quite often protects our freedoms and saves us from some of the worst excesses of the state is the House of Lords, which is the most undemocratic of institutions. but it's often the one that's most effective at standing up to the government and saying, no, you're not doing this.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think most people actually don't realize how much power they have. Ultimately, all these people, all these bad people, governments, politicians, whatever, they only have that power because we give it to them. You know, and it's really simple. We just need to say no. We just need to vote Jonathan Tilt. I mean, well, seriously, let's just get part of it. I'm just saying that's just one example. I mean, seriously, if tomorrow everybody votes for Andreas Michley as the London mayor and Jonathan Tilt as the West Yorkshire mayor, right? That is a bombshell.
Completely. And even if we don't get elected, if we get 15-20% of the vote, that's a bombshell. That will absolutely terrify them. I can guarantee you that. But we, it isn't just voting. We need to, we did say no. 18.4% of us, according to ONS, said no to any form of vaccination. So that was, and that's what stopped them. That's what stopped them in the track. They thought, this is just too many. We can't counter these people. You know, even when they really put the pressure on with the NHS staff, 8% still said, no, well, you can take our livelihood off us. We're not doing it. It wasn't predominantly doctors. It was healthcare assistants and people that were more prominent in that. And I think that, that absolutely terrified them. They thought, 20% of the people, the population here, essentially are resisting. This is going to go down the route of civil war and things like that if we carry on pushing. And they backed off. And they will come again. And that 18.4% will, then, our numbers will be swelled. They may not be swelled by many, but we may get up to 23, 24, 25.
Yeah, 100%. Listen, I was on those marches, and I can confirm.
We're going to have to do that again. We are going to have to do that again, I think.
Yeah. But I was on those marches fighting against the mandates. Okay. I was out on the streets, and I can tell you right now, there were no other doctors. There was Anthony Hinton, actually. He is a doctor, but that was just Anthony Hinton and myself. I might be wrong. There might have been a handful of others, but basically it was paramedics, healthcare assistants, nurses, managers, secretarial staff, whatever. And it was a lot, mate. There was a lot. And I'm talking about easily 100,000. And you know what? The BBC didn't even report it. We marched right past BBC House and they didn't even report it. But knew, the authorities knew, the streets were jam-packed. And they were like, all right. You know, the way they work is they push you. And then when you push back, they stop. Then they push you. And then you push back, they stop. And they stopped then. But 100%, like you're saying, they will try again tomorrow. But I think my sense is that people are waking up. Everybody's like, I'm not taking any more of these shots. I'm not, whatever. I think they'll have gone away now for a long time and they won't come back, but they will try. They will always try. Just like, for example, digital ID. You know, Tony Blair tried to bring it in. David Cameron tried to bring it in. And it's like, we've said no. But they never say, okay, fine. They go, oh, damn it. We'll just come back in a few years' time. And that's what they try and do. But, people need to stand up. And it doesn't even have to be the majority. Like you said, 5%, 8%, 10%. But a strong, driven, focused minority can actually change the whole landscape. And that's why I would say to everyone listening, if you live in West Yorkshire, if you live in Bradford, if you live in Leeds, if you believe in freedom and you love your freedom and your health and you don't like wars, and you don't like big government and you want to be able to travel wherever you go and whenever you want, vote for Jonathan Tilt. But send that message to 5 of your friends. Send his website, send this podcast and say, look, vote for Jonathan Tilt. And when you send it to 5 other people, each one of those people have to send it to another 5 people. And that's how you just get that exponential growth. And just say, look, what have you got to lose? You hate them anyway. Don't just not vote. Just, you know what? Stick a finger in the eye of the man and say, F you, here we go. We're going to vote for Jonathan Tilt. And you know what? Let's make some waves. I mean, even if you come second, you push a main party. Dude, that's amazing. All I would say is when you're on that stage giving your acceptance speech, just don't speak so fast.
Yes, we chatted on this. I accept it's criticism, but I am who I am. I do speak quite quickly.
I'm joking.
It would be wrong to artificially change myself for the purposes of getting more votes. So yeah, I talk quickly. I'm sorry.
I'm joking. Right, listen, Jonathan, you're busy. We need to go. It's 10:40. I promise you, we'd be done by now. Last question. Listen, you're on your deathbed, surrounded by your family. Don't worry, it's not tomorrow. It's like you're 150. And before you pass on and meet your maker, what advice and wisdoms would you impart on your loved ones around you?
Right, that's an interesting question. I wasn't really expecting. Be yourself, I think, would be my parting advice to whoever wished to listen. Just be yourself.
Cool. Well, listen, if you listened to my podcast, you would have known that's coming. Listen, I'll put all the links out in the show notes and get this podcast out as soon as possible. And everyone, once again, if you know of anyone who lives in West Yorkshire, if you live in West Yorkshire, vote for this man. He's a good man. He cares. He's not captured. Please just vote for Jonathan Tilt. Thanks, Jonathan.